It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it is 68 degrees, which was our predicted high for the day. 64 degrees out at the airport, where they have 41% humidity, northeast winds to 5, 10 miles of visibility. Partly sunny for the rest of the day with a high near 68. Mostly clear skies tonight with a low around 56. Calm winds should turn to the northwest to 5 this evening. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 70 with west winds to 10. Partly sunny on Sunday with a high near 59. And starting Monday, cloudy skies, just a chance of showers Monday through Thursday. Coming up on the Midday Report, former Governor Bill Walker made a campaign stop in Kodiak during Crab Festival. Dylan Simard talked to him. A wildfire is burning in the Katmai National Park and Preserve. So far, they're just going to let it burn. And another contentious meeting for the Anchorage Assembly.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Another solid month for U.S. job growth. The Labor Department revealing today that in May, the economy gained 390,000 jobs and the unemployment rate still at a low of 3.6%. President Biden applauded the creation of more jobs, but warned Americans against expecting blockbuster job reports month after month as the U.S. had seen over this past year. He says moderation's a good thing, a sign of a healthy economy. All while warnings of a recession grow louder. Today, Reuters reported that Tesla CEO Elon Musk sent an email to executives saying he had a, quote, super bad feeling about the economy and that the electric car company needs to cut about 10% of salaried staff. President Biden offered a rebuttal to the SpaceX founder's gloomy outlook by noting other major companies such as Ford are actually expanding.
Former Chrysler Corporation, Stellantis, they are also making similar investments in electric vehicles. Intel is adding 20,000 new jobs for making computer chips. Lots of luck on his trip to the moon.
Food and Drug Administration scientists say a different COVID-19 vaccine appears to be highly effective, which could set the stage for the vaccine to win emergency authorization. Here's NPR's Rob Stein.
The FDA scientists say a study involving about 30,000 volunteers showed that the vaccine, made by a company called Novavax, is about 90% effective at preventing mild, moderate, or severe COVID-19. The assessment comes in advance of a meeting of FDA advisors next Tuesday to consider recommending the FDA authorize the vaccine. Novavax may also be useful as a booster. One key question is how well the Novavax vaccine works against the Omicron variant, which wasn't circulating during the study. The FDA scientists also say they are concerned about a possible link to a rare heart inflammation. Rob Stein, NPR News.
In the wake of recent mass shootings in Uvalde and Buffalo, several schools in Maine witnessed a student walkout today. About 200 students gathered outside Republican Senator Susan Collins' office in Portland to demand a ban on assault-style weapons. Maine Public Radio's Patty White has more.
No more guns! No more guns!
Students chanted as they marched through city streets before arriving outside Senator Collins' office. Cape Elizabeth High School junior Stella Crawford, who spearheaded the protest, read a letter to Collins out loud.
We want to learn and live without fear. We demand that you advocate for the children of your state rather than your donors and your party. Sincerely, concerned students of your state.
A spokesperson for Collins issued a statement that the senator has been meeting with a bipartisan group of lawmakers who are making rapid progress toward a common-sense package on gun safety legislation. For NPR News, I'm Patty White in Portland, Maine.
The Dow closes down more than 1%. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Former Governor Bill Walker made a campaign stop in Kodiak during the island's Crab Festival last weekend. As KMXT's Dylan Samard reports, he was not the only gubernatorial candidate to hit the Crab Fest campaign trail.
10 candidates are running for governor this year, and Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Charlie Pierce, a Republican, was the only other candidate to visit Kodiak's Crab Festival. He met with supporters at a booth during his time in town. The state of Alaska has gone to a ranked choice voting system since the last gubernatorial election, and former Governor Bill Walker says he approves of the new process.
We do have a new system, and it's one that I think is going to be help voters have more choices. I think anytime we have more choices, it's a good thing.
Walker is a registered independent and served one term as governor from 2014 to 2018. On the first day of Crab Fest, Walker and his running mate Heidi Dreigas attended the grand opening and ribbon cutting of Double Shovel Cidery. Later that evening, he attended a meet and greet hosted by supporters on the island. Walker and Dreigas stopped by KMXT's studios the following day to talk about the campaign. Walker says that while ranked choice voting changes up campaign strategy in the general election, the primary season is more or less the same tactics as when he last ran for governor.
It doesn't change anything much in the primary. It does in the general. It doesn't really change anything for us too much. We're just running our campaign focused on unseating the incumbent.
Kodiak's Crab Festival was host to many current and aspiring politicians. Senator Lisa Murkowski was in town along with her challenger Kelly Shibaka, as well as candidates for Alaska's lone House seat. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
A private pilot reported a wildfire on Sunday night in Katmai National Park and Preserve, according to the National Park Service. The fire is currently smoldering and growing to the southeast, but it hasn't damaged any infrastructure yet. Officials say lightning likely caused the Contact Creek fire, which is burning in an uninhabited area about 40 miles southeast of King Salmon on Lake Brooks. Park Service Public Information Officer Karen McKee says residents of King Salmon may see smoke from the fire, which has spread across an estimated 3,500 acres. The fire is a mile and a half from a remote weather station.
Crews have actually gone in and finished wrapping that weather station in protective structure wraps to protect it just in case the fire should reach it. That is, at this point, the fire has not reached it.
Crews with the Park Service and the Division of Forestry are monitoring the fire by air, but they're not actively controlling it. Each national park has its own fire management plan. In Katmai, fires in areas without a lot of infrastructure are usually left to burn, and the Contact Creek fire is about 20 miles from the nearest native allotment.
The unique thing about Alaska is there's so many areas where a fire might start that it's just not near any infrastructure, and sometimes the fire can even be beneficial to the ecosystem. So in those limited management areas, what they'll do is monitor the fire and just make sure it's not encroaching on any infrastructure, but not actively suppress it. And then they can always change tactics if needed, if the fire conditions were to change.
McKee says that this fire is burning tundra and grass, but so far it hasn't burned that deep into the vegetation.
The fire management officers that were observing it in the last couple of days described it as it's really only burning about the top 3 inches or so of the vegetation, so it's really kind of staying at the surface.
Hot and dry weather around Alaska has triggered red flag warnings and burn bans. In the Bristol Bay area, that weather is expected to continue into this weekend. Gasoline prices have been steadily increasing for months. Alaskans filling up at the gas pump today are paying around $2 more per gallon than this time last year, and there's no clear end in sight. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George visited a gas station in Anchorage recently and talked to Alaskans who are rethinking their driving habits this summer.
Daryl Sample is watching the gas meter tick steadily upward as he fills his Mercedes sedan at a Chevron in East Anchorage.
I have about a quarter of a tank, and right now, $50, I only have about 9 gallons at $50. So it is hurting. It is hurting. It's hit me in my wallet more so than what I would prefer to.
Last summer, Sample says he'd fill up once a week. This summer, he's trying to wait 2 or 3 weeks before hitting the gas station. Gas prices in Anchorage have jumped from a little over $3 a gallon to more than $5 in the last year. At the Chevron today, a gallon of regular unleaded is $5.50. Across the street at the Holiday, it's $5.30. The Anchorage Daily News reported prices upward of $10 in rural communities last month. Sample says it's changed how he thinks about driving these days.
I actually would have been more frequently visiting friends or taking more trips, whether it be to the store or to somewhere that I can enjoy in Anchorage or outside of Anchorage.
A few stalls over, Sam Campbell is filling up his Toyota pickup truck, which is towing a skiff on a trailer. He says the jump in gas prices means he'll be fishing closer to home this year.
Pretty much all the rivers out of South Central I probably won't travel to this year where I otherwise would have. Yeah, between filling the truck and filling the boat, it's pretty expensive to go very far.
Longtime oil industry observer Larry Persily says the recent spike can be ascribed to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which threw uncertainty into the market and lowered the overall supply of crude oil as countries around the world moved to ban Russian oil.
It's tightened the supply, it's made people nervous, made markets nervous, and has dropped prices higher.
But prices were increasing even before the war, and Persily says that's because of long-term production snags caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Refining capacity dropped in the U.S. over the last few years, and it hasn't caught up to this summer's increased demand.
We just don't have the ability in this country to make as much fuel. We just don't have as many refineries pumping out as many barrels. So high oil prices, constrained supply from refineries, growing demand. It's just expensive for gasoline.
The high price of gas, diesel, and jet fuel are driving inflation, Persily says, since those extra costs get passed down the supply chain all the way to the groceries and other goods you buy at the store. So what brings prices back down? Persily says it's a straightforward combination of decreased consumption and increased supply.
Russia stopping its war on Ukraine and coming back into the good graces of the rest of the world and selling its oil, that could lower the prices.
Or other global suppliers could ramp up production. Any solution, Persily notes, will take time. In the meantime, federal data show gas prices may have increased to a point that consumer demand has actually gone down. Demand for gas nationwide is down roughly 5% from last summer. Sample at the Chevron says he's not worried about how he'll manage if prices stay high.
No, I got a bike, so I'm determined not to let this beat me. I can get more exercise in, lose some more weight, and manage my travel.
Today, he's only filling half a tank, which he says he'll try to stretch as long as he can. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
On Wednesday night, Anchorage Assembly members voted to postpone a decision on whether to add to city code another set of procedures so that they could remove a mayor for breaching the public trust. The Assembly will take the ordinance up again on their meeting on Tuesday. The decision to delay followed nearly 5 hours of public testimony, with almost all speakers opposing the ordinance. Their testimony was marked by frequent interruptions from the crowd of more than 100, including applause and cheers. At one point, opponents started singing the national anthem. Security removed two people for yelling. Many people testifying underscored their support for Mayor Dave Bronson, who has strongly opposed the ordinance. And many, like South Anchorage resident Eric Lambertson, also expressed their anger with the Progressive Assembly majority.
You have absolutely been pathetic. You're pathetic, and you need to go. And I have 1 minute left. If I can make one thing clear to you, I don't like you.
Speakers also accused the Assembly of breaching the separation of powers between the legislative and executive branches and accused proponents of the proposal of stoking divisions within the community. Some said the ordinance is written too broadly. It allows for impeachment for things like accepting bribes, lying under oath, and, quote, official oppression, close quote. Bayshore Community Council President Dave Weir pointed out that there already is a law that sets out how a mayor can be removed.
There's already a procedure in place to remove the mayor. It's called a recall. If anyone on the assembly thinks the mayor has done anything wrong, they can follow that process to remove him. The people voted the mayor in, and the people should be the one to decide if he needs to be removed.
Mayor Bronson and assembly members have repeatedly clashed since the mayor took office last summer. But downtown assembly member Chris Constant, who authored the new ordinance, has argued his proposal isn't intended to remove the mayor. He says it wouldn't apply to breaches of public trust that happened before the ordinance was passed. Constant said it's designed to set the same bar for the assembly to remove the mayor that already exists for the assembly to remove fellow assembly members and school board members. In an 8-3 vote, the assembly voted to postpone its decision. Members said they wanted to get more information after new issues were raised by the public and wanted to consult with their lawyer. Eagle River members Kevin Cross and Jamie Allard were joined by South Anchorage's Randy Schult in casting the dissenting votes. Cross had pushed to delay the vote indefinitely. Near the end of its session, the Alaska legislature took a step toward naming a mountain on the Kenai Peninsula after a trailblazing lawmaker from Homer. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Gail Phillips represented the Southern Kenai Peninsula on a host of local boards and councils, eventually serving in the Alaska legislature as the two-time Speaker of the House in the 1990s. But her reputation preceded her well beyond the Kenai, says her longtime friend Catherine Thomas of Soldotna.
Through the time that she was in the House of Representatives and ran for office, I was always amazed. Wherever we were in the state, people knew Gail. She knew them. They always thought that she was their advocate. She was their best friend. She had supported their projects. She listened to them.
Phillips passed away in March 2021 at the age of 76. Now her friends and family are working to root her legacy in the place she called home. The Alaska legislature voted last month to support naming a mountain on Turnagain Arm after Phillips, which they'd call Gail Phillips Peak. Thomas says the mountain, which is next to Hope Peak, is the perfect place for a tribute. It's inclusive of a lot of the things Phillips cared about in her lifetime.
This particular mountain, you can see from the home that Gail and Walt built in Anchorage. And when you leave Anchorage, it's to your right. It's directly across from McHugh Creek. Beautiful vista there. And the end of the mountain is at Hope. And she loved gold mining. It's something her family did.
Phillips was born in Juneau in 1944. A child of missionaries, she grew up in Council and in Nome. Thomas says that's where she got her boundless energy.
She was raised in a very active family in Nome, and that carried over to Gail's involvement in business and her community and what her political commitment to Alaska.
She got involved in politics in high school and then in college in Fairbanks. She was a lifetime Republican and a staunch supporter of resource development in Alaska. In 1978, Phillips and her husband, Walt, moved to Homer and opened an outdoor recreation store there, Quiet Sports. She served on the Homer City Council and the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly. For a decade, she represented the Southern Kenai Peninsula in the Alaska House, including as the twice-elected speaker. She was the second ever woman to hold that role. Her time working in the legislature is how Thomas came to know her. Thomas's son was in Juneau around the same time.
And he told Gail and he told his mother that we would become best friends as soon as we met. Mm-hmm. And he was right.
She says they both really cared about the economic direction the state was headed in. Phillips, as a lifelong Alaskan who was privy to the booms and busts of the state's economy, and Thomas as a small business owner. And as anticipated, the two became fast friends. Then their families did as well.
Knowing Gail meant that you become part of Gail's circle of friends. Gail always tried to bring everyone along. She had you interact. She had the families interact. It was a network in Gail style.
The connection spanned generations. Thomas's granddaughter, Kate DeBartolaben, says she considered Phillips part of the family.
Gail would always include us in her conversations in legislature. She would always make us feel important and include our opinions in that.
Nome Democratic Senator Donnie Olson supported the resolution in the legislature this session. During a committee meeting, he said Phillips created coalitions in the political sphere, much like she did amongst friends and family.
She brought together urban Republicans and rural Democrats to form a coalition that she led as Speaker of the House for two consecutive terms.
He said the Mountain is an apt memorial for Phillips because it was one of her favorites. But also, he said, it's emblematic of her character.
The mountains are stable, strong, and brave. Gail Phillips lived her life in these defining attributes.
The Mountain name isn't legally changed yet. The motion from the legislature is a recommendation. The Phillips family will have to wait a few years after her death before they can legally request a name change. Then the U.S. Board on Geographic Names will make a final decision. In the meantime, friends and family are referring to the peak as Gail's Mountain. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
The first professionally managed video rental store in the U.S. was opened by George Atkinson in December of 1977 in Los Angeles. After 20th Century Fox had made an arrangement with Magnetic Video founder Andre Blay to license him 50 of their titles for sale directly to consumers, amongst them Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, MASH, and Hello Dolly, Atkinson bought all the titles in both VHS and beta formats and offered them for rent. Such stores led to the creation of video rental chains such as West Coast Video and Blockbuster Video. By May of 1988, the number of video specialty stores was estimated to be 25,000. With the introduction of the thin, lightweight DVD disc, movie rentals by mail services became feasible, introducing a new source of competition for brick-and-mortar stores. With the advent of the World Wide Web, internet services such as Netflix have become increasingly popular since the mid-2000s. All of these new ways of watching movies have greatly reduced the demand for video rental shops, and many have closed down as a result. In 2000, there were 27,882 stores left, and in late 2015, it was only 4,445. In 2017, it was reported that about 86% of 15,300 video stores that were open in the U.S. in 2007 were closed. As of June 2019, there is only one Blockbuster store still open, and it is in Bend, Oregon. The Bend store has been open since 2000, and it has unique features that are the reason it has survived, and there are no plans to close it. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Friday. It is the third day of June, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:15. It will set again at 11 o'clock. That will give us 17 hours and 45 minutes of daylight, a gain of 2 minutes and 29 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low for this date was 30 degrees, set in 1968, and a record high was 69, set in 1957. There's a possibility we could get past that today. It is 70 degrees here at the station now, but our official degrees are from the airport, where it is 64 degrees right now. They're calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 68, calm winds, mostly clear tonight, a low of 56. Those calm winds are going to turn to the northwest at 5 in the evening. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 70, west winds around 10. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 6:03 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 6-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 10:57, almost 11. That will be a 3.4-foot tide. Over on the west side, that high tide will occur at 6:12 p.m. and be 10.8 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:38 p.m. of 5.2 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Southwest 10 today, seas to 3 feet. West 15 tomorrow, seas to 5 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 today, seas to 2 feet. And for tonight through Saturday, Southwest 15, seas to 3 feet. Senior citizens of Kodiak will be holding their annual and regular monthly board meeting on Wednesday. That's happening at noon at the Kodiak Senior Center. A delicious lunch will be served at the congregate setting and curbside setting, and brief business reports will be given. The event is for people 60 and older, and the donation for lunch is $7. For more information, call the center at 486-6181. The Kodiak City Council will be having a work session next Tuesday, and they will be having a regular meeting next Thursday. Both meetings will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held in the Kodiak Public Library. The meetings are open to the public, and public members are encouraged to tune in right here on KMXT at 100.1 FM. The meetings will also be web-streamed, and the links and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you wish to request meeting materials or have questions regarding the meetings, please contact the clerk at 907-486-8636. The Board of Education will be having a work session next Monday, followed immediately by a special meeting. That's happening Monday at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is F-140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed through BlueJeans, and login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website at www.kibsd.org. Look under the Board of Education tab. Items on the special meeting agenda include certificated contracts, the milk supply bid award, a purchase requisition for Veritive Operating Company, a purchase order revision for Ann's Physical Therapy and Massage, and CTE Skills Career Camp Grant Award, as well as an executive session regarding school finance. For more information, call Bianca Clark, who is Secretary to the Board of Education, at 907-486-7566. There will be an LGBTQ plus friendly rave cycle class held at the Balanced Approach next Friday. That's Friday, June 10th at 7 p.m. It's a fun and friendly exercise class for anyone 14 years of age and up. You can sign up on Zen Planner if you already are a member of a Balanced Approach, or give them an email at info@abacodiac.com. That's info@abacodiac.com. Class size is limited, so please sign up today. Donations for Kodiak Pride will be accepted at the door. Find out more by visiting the Kodiak Pride Facebook page. I have in my hand new numbers from the Weir Counts cumulative escapement. The Chignik River has seen 18 sockeye. That was yesterday. Their total for 2022 is 24 now. In Karlik, yesterday they saw 3,568 sockeye, and their total limit, their total for the year is now 4,885. They also counted 12 Chinooks. 45 Chinooks have so far come through Karlik, and 74 steelhead came down the Karlik yesterday for 166 total. At the Iakulik River, they counted 432 sockeye yesterday for a grand total of 2,998, just about 3,000 fish total at the Iakulik so far. 12 Chinooks, which gives them 47 total, and they counted 17 steelhead coming down the river for a total of 70 steelhead coming down the river at Iakulik. Dog Salmon Creek has counted no fish so far this year. At Upper Station, they counted 1,603 fish yesterday. They have a total of 5,977 now at Upper Station, sockeye that is. And at Litnick, they counted 61 sockeye yesterday. 451 total sockeye have been counted at Litnick, and 38 total steelhead, but none yesterday. Unfortunately, at the Buskin, they counted 0 sockeye yesterday. 0 steelhead came down, and for the total for the year at the Buskin is 0 sockeye and 1 steelhead. Things happening at the Kodiak Public Library. Come to the garden party. That's happening today at 1 o'clock. So get ready That's happening between 1 and 3 p.m. Grab your grubbies and help plant the library's summer pollinator garden. Call Lori for more information at 486-8688 or just show up. It's happening at 1 o'clock today, just about a half hour. Also today at 3:30 p.m., the library's escape room opens for the summer. Grab a couple of friends to use logic, instinct, and detective skills to figure out the clues and solve the puzzle. It's open to all ages, but children under 14 should be accompanied by an adult. Physical space is limited, so groups of three are recommended. Give the library a call at 486-8686 to reserve your spot. And tomorrow at 11 a.m. is the first session of Campfire Stories and S'mores. Come outside behind the library, sit by the fire pit, and enjoy various stories and delicious s'mores with Ms. Ani. The session is for kids, 6 to 11, and an adult. Call the library at 486-8686 to sign up. But again, that's tomorrow at 11 a.m., and it should be great weather for that.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.